we are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
I'm Michael Storm, and as always, it's just great to get to come and hang out with you when I do and chat about the things that we chat about, and there's plenty to talk about today because this is a fun one. This is something that is the intersection of everything that is and has been my life for basically the last 40 years in some roundabout way or another, most definitely. And I'll get into the detail of that in just a second and explain why you want to hang around for it. But just take a moment right now to click that like button wherever you're finding me at today. Click the like button, tap it, smash it, sneak up behind it and tickle its ribs, whatever you got to do to get it to pay attention. Let me know that you're out there. That's kind of, you know, voting with your, using your real voting power and selecting the things that you like and making sure that they get the recognition for it. So I truly appreciate it. You can subscribe and you can follow along at Toward Anarchy X, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all of those places. And if you are so inclined to do so, you can follow along at towardanarchy.com with every episode, including this episode. If there's ever any links or information, extra stuff that I want to include, plus there's always a meme and a quote and other things that you can look at there as well, as well as of course the all the other episodes, not just this one. This will be 2622 is this episode, and this is all about that bricks and minifigures scandal. And some of you have heard of it. A lot of you have heard about it. And some of you may know something about it. Some of you may have an opinion about it already. Many of you will not know it because it's interesting. And so I'll tell you why you want to hang around. If you're one of my regular listeners, you want to hang around because there's plenty of this thing has everything in it, except maybe jilted lovers, this little scandal here. There's corporate shenanigans. We have crooked, ignorant cops. We have civil attorneys and commercial attorneys and patent attorneys. And I don't know, every single kind of attorney in the world seem to be looking at this thing along with the newsmen. And of course, the influencer, the YouTubers all across the internet, everyone commenting on it and commenting from their own angle and from their lack of understanding and lack of information and lack of going out there. They're just going on what they watched on some other video. They haven't gone, taken the extra step. They didn't spend 40 years studying economics and the social impact of it, a little bit of history, obviously collecting. I own a comic book store, and we sell Legos and minifigures and bricks. I've collected many of them over the years myself. And so it's an interesting intersection of all these things that I, you know, when we're talking about attorneys and laws and contracts and UCC-1, how's that sound for a reason to hang out? Because I know some of you guys just love that. But because of the fact that it is a sort of crossover in my life, there are areas of my life that I don't cross over with each other. While many of the people know me as just a comic book guy, because I own a shop here in Topeka, Kansas, and a toy guy. They don't know this other side of me, this political side of me, if you will, this social side of me where I'm talking about politics and social issues and economics. And some of them do, some of them don't. And they know that I call myself the anarchist of comic books, but they don't know that I necessarily that I spend thousands and thousands of people do every week know and listen. But there's the, you know, they don't necessarily. And so there's a disconnect between the people who come into my store and buy from me as a comic book shop owner and a toy owner and who I am outside of the comic book shop. Ultimately, I'm not entirely just about there's a lot of it. it's definitely around all the time, but it's not all my life is about, obviously. And so these thousands and thousands of people every week all around the world that listen to the show, whether it's across the network or whether they download it or it's YouTube or wherever it is, and they know about the comic book shop. They know that connection in me, but they also know this side of me and this side of me that can and does and analyze political and social ideas historically. The context, there's all these wonderful little things, and so this, it's just this perfect intersection of these ideas, and so that's what we're going to talk about today. If you don't know about it, it's the Bricks and Minifigures scandal. That it's this thing that's been going on for a while now. It's not just the last week, but that's when it's really come to the surface. Is a bunch of there was a particular video that was posted, and then the YouTubers and influencers, they catch this stuff because they hear from somebody in their feed that says, hey, you got to go watch this video and you got to check this out. These people are getting hosed and these interesting things are going on around and you should check it out because you're an influencer and you know. And so they do, and they're getting involved in it. And it's crazy. There's a lot of noise because there are all these, you know, like I said, all these attorneys and all these influencers and news people, and it's just everybody has an opinion, but not all of them have a crazily super informed opinion like I do of this whole thing. As it so, there's a bunch going on here. You know, there's a criminal case and there's civil cases and there's contracts and there's things that should have been done and could have been done and would have been done. it's just a really great story. So hang out, and I'm going to lay it all out for you and try to reduce a bunch of the noise that's out there. It's obvious that there's a lot of noise out there because there are a lot of people that are hating on one group or person or another in this thing, and it's an issue. It's become an issue for a lot of people. Some people are getting sued. Other people have been arrested. So let's give you the story. And I'm using last names only on this because it's just easier that way. There's at least a couple of the people involved that have the same or similar names, and so right there, that tells me let's not do that. Let's just go with names, corporate names, last names, and corporate names. So here's where it is. This is the big Lego, the Star Wars Lego collection scandal. This is in what's going on with Bricks and Minifigures, which is a corporation. It is a chain of little stores, franchise stores that buy and sell bricks. I won't just say Lego, and I don't know that that's the case. I've never been in one of their stores, so I don't know that they just sell Lego. It seems to me if they were Lego stores and that's all they sold, they'd be called Lego stores, but they're not. They're Bricks and Minifigures, so presumably there's, you know, whatever. They're selling interlocking bricks and little miniature figures that can be played with the interlocking bricks, and Lego just happens to be, you know, the big one out there. So it's like this. It starts in the early 2000s with the Manziel family. The Manziel patriarch, the old man of the family, has money. He spends it, a great deal of it, apparently, over the years into the early 2000s, collecting sealed Lego Star Wars sets and the minifigures. And if some of you will know and some of you will not know, I have owned hundreds and hundreds of I currently own hundreds. There's 300 of them on the wall surrounding me right now. That doesn't count all the ones that are in tubs and packages and other. It's not like I have them just everywhere. In fact, my stuff is really well organized, but I have a lot of them. I had a lot of them. I owned most of the Lego sets that are in question. Well, maybe not most, because I don't know how many there truly are and what the values of them are, but I owned many of the original Lego Star Wars sets. It was my thing and always has been. I was right out of college, started buying them 1995, and then 1996, 97, 98. This is when all of the new movies came out, that the prequels, and we started getting the new action figures. And of course, I'm out on my own. I have my own money. If I want to buy action figures, I can, and I want to buy Legos, I can. And I've owned at least 300 different Lego Star Wars, specifically minifigures. I couldn't even begin to tell you how many sets. I'll share the video with you. There's a video of my collection that has been on the internet for a while, and it was only part of my collection, and only part of it over a very short period of time. It's been off and on over years, and it doesn't reflect what I have now, even. But a lot of Lego, a lot of Star Wars, and that's what this is about, this whole thing. And so these guys, they collect all these sets and figures. They're really valuable. I know I've bought figures and sets and sold them for hundreds of dollars without even trying later on. I've sold one figure alone for $600. Vintage 90s, 2000s Lego Star Wars. It's the top of the chain when it comes to vintage Star Wars, vintage Legos, period. Except for some of the oldest, still super complete sets. So this Manziel family, they spend tens of thousands of dollars, save all these Legos over the years, and so this is, now we get to the point where, all right, Legos, yep, we know, we got, I collect them, I have tons of them around me all the time, and people consider me an expert, the people around me, there's only one person I know personally that has more Legos than me, or had, haven't talked to him in a while, he may not have that many Legos anymore. But it's right in my bailiwick, you know? And if you don't know what a bailiwick is, it's a sort of special domain of knowledge. But this is, it's not just that. It's the cross knowledge here, my insight into the law and particular legal matters. That's why I thought I'd bring this reaction to you, because it just crosses so many points, and I get to share it across the areas that divide my life, for sure. Like I said, some people know me as this comic book and toy guy, and then everybody else knows me as somebody who does this every week and talks about these political and social ideas. And so I've been doing the toy collecting and things for years, since I was a child. And then by the time I was in my 20s, I was into understanding more. I was introduced to it long before that, but the Federal Reserve and the Federal Reserve notes and things. I knew all these things since I was probably 12 years old. But it wasn't until my early 20s that I started getting involved in it and making my real opinions about life, and that makes sense, because up until then, I'm either a kid under my parents' care, or I'm potentially to somebody, a thug running wild in the streets at any rate. It's been... There's all that connection right there, and it's all very, very obvious. You know, I've owned the Chrome Gold 3PO, which at one point was, I've actually owned two of them, at one point was the most expensive, most valuable single individual Lego figure that there was out there. That's since been surpassed. There are others that have come along since, but it's still super, super, super rare. And like I said, I have a video of that, and you can check all that out. And so it's really fun, and just knowing that I have all this, but so that there's this real true connection there in understanding these Legos, the value of them. I understand I own a retail business. I will take things on consignment, so I understand that angle of it. But then the rest of it as well, there's just so much fun here. So the old man is dying. The patriarch of the Manziel family is dying. His son takes the Legos, the figures, takes it all to do a consignment deal with this building block brick company chain called Bricks and Minifigures, except rather it's the one of the franchises. It's not the company itself. This franchise is owned by a couple. They're the Gormans, and they intend to split with them. The Manziel family gets 65%. The store gets 35%. The collection's estimated, at least they promoted it at that, at a $200,000 value. And I guess the idea was that it'll pay for the grandkids to go to college before the patriarch of the family dies. And they were trying to accomplish all this in this time period, and that's why some of it, I guess, is very frustrating for them. And so the son exclusively, I imagine, through this Manziel — when I say Manziel, I'll be talking about the son, I imagine, for the rest of this. So he made what we would understand, some of my listeners will understand, this is a common law bailment with the Gormans, in which we would normally call a consignment. We all sort of agree it's a consignment. And I do it myself. I call it a consignment myself, but I'll explain the difference, because it's kind of legally important, and it has to do with the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, too. So they create this agreement and supposedly sign it. I've never seen a signed copy, and I don't know if anybody has seen a signed copy. Now, just within the last, just a little more than 24 hours or so ago, just about a day ago, depending on when this actually gets into your hands. It was about a day ago from the time I'm recording it, and a couple of changes have been made. It looks like the company Bricks and Minifigures has had enough evidence to prove that there was something going on, and so they've made some changes with the current business partner that took over the store from the Gormans. We'll get there, because that's just a developing thing in and of itself. But and so they make this little deal. They get this consignment, and they create a contract. We love to talk about contracts around here, with pretty simply spelled out terms. And that's why it's really a bailment, because if you look at the contract there, it's basically what a contract is that I'm going to deliver with the bailment. I'm going to deliver goods to you, and you're going to take them, but they're my goods. You're just holding them. Whatever you're doing with them, the final disposition of them is still up to me, whatever happens. So they're still mine. And that's a common law bailment. That's just an agreement. Lots of people are familiar with that sort of idea. I haven't seen this actual signed contract, but I think that they have, and there must be enough evidence for them, because they've decided to go forward with it. They're suing people, and as they should. So the governments, they take possession of these Legos, this collection. They promote them and they sell them. They're keeping the 35%. Which is not a bad consignment deal at all, in case you're wondering. 35% is really good for everybody. And all of this has just gone viral over the last week, like I said, but it's been going on for more than a year, really. The Gormans, they've sold, apparently, and delivered — that's important — and they've not just sold it, but they've actually given over the money, 65% of, $65,000, about $100,000 of it has been sold, apparently. That's what they're talking about. And, of course, based on that initial estimate of the collections, we don't know if it's half the collection. It's just half of that estimated value. That's part of what's going on, is that nobody knows necessarily where the Legos were. In fact, the Gormans took some of the Legos home with them, took some of the sets home with them. And while we know that some of those sets came back, we don't know how many were taken in the first place to know that they were all taken back. And that's part of the problem here, is sort of being able to take and control and claim who was in what possession of what part of the inventory at any given time. And so the Gormans, everything's going fine up to that point, and then it all breaks down. It stops at some point after they sold about half of it off, or what we assume to be half of the value of it. It all starts to break down. The owners of the franchise, they claim that they didn't get any support from the corporation, and that ultimately it wasn't long before they were behind in the rent, they were behind in the franchise fees, who knows what all else they were behind in. They're just in debt, and they're not running the business, and it's not successful, and they're pointing fingers, and other people are pointing fingers back at them. So they just decide they want out of it, and they're going to try to get out if they can. That's it. They're going to bail. And so Brixen and Minifigures, they say that the Gormans aren't successful because of their own reasons for whatever it is. And, of course, they're in debt to the corporation. And there seems to be close to $100,000 that they owe the corporation, including sort of $50,000 in franchising and a whole bunch of rent. This all seems to be legit. Core audience here, guys, this is a voluntary debt that they created. They agreed to, unless it's proven that the corporation violated the contract that they have for franchising, possibly invalidating the franchise agreement through any particular action or thing that they promised but didn't deliver that's in the contract and really sort of spelled out there in terms of tools and support and things that they're supposed to provide for the Gormans. The Gormans are going to be found liable for the debt that they owe the corporation. It's going to be upwards of $100,000, and that's before any other assessments or interest or another. So guarantee that. The Gormans owe these guys upwards of $100,000, and they will be assessed it unless and until the Gormans are capable of proving, and I don't think they are, capable of proving that it's BAM's fault, that it's Bricks and Minifigure's fault. Because it seems unlikely. It's not impossible, but it seems unlikely, especially when you start adding everything else up. So at this point, there's no connection here between Mansell and Bricks and Minifigures. There's no agreement. There's no contract. And apparently, there's not supposed to be one, because supposedly the Gormans aren't supposed to be able to enter into a contract like this, a consignment agreement like this, without maybe permission directly from BAM, or maybe they're not supposed to do it at all. It seems to be the Bricks and Minifigures Corporation seems to be standing by that they're not supposed to be able to do it, that they did it outside of their agreement with the corporation. And frankly, I'll say it now, that's superfluous. It doesn't even matter. It really just doesn't even matter, because the corporation didn't make this contract with them. It doesn't matter if it's against the terms of their agreement or not, because the agreement that matters in the sense of the Legos is obviously between Mansell and the Gormans. The corporation didn't create that agreement. And that makes sense why the corporation would say, well, you can't go around making agreements like this. But there's no connection between them at this point. So the corporation doesn't owe Mansell anything, and there's nothing that points to the corporation owing Mansell anything at this point. So apparently there's moves to go ahead and try to reclaim the remaining collection. At some point, the Gormans stop paying and they stop communicating, and that's when other people start to get involved. Now, I saw the Gormans video that broke about a week ago. I think it was at this point. I really didn't look at the timestamp on it. And I'll tell you this right off. I stopped watching the video. I went back and looked. I stopped watching the video exactly 1 minute and 25 seconds in. It's only just over 4 minutes, because it didn't sit right with me. There was something about them that I didn't like, the things that they were saying. While it appeared to be valid claims, I knew that it just wasn't that simple. And I was going to forget about it, but you know how the algorithm is. It doesn't let you forget things. And so right after that, it popped up. Asmongold had it. I didn't watch his video. Charlie had a video on it. It was like 8 minutes or something. So I watched that, and it intrigued me, but it was only one perspective of it. And so then I started looking around, and it just turned out that there's all these other characters involved, and some of them are people that I follow, in particular a civil rights attorney. And this other YouTuber gets involved, this guy named Reckless Ben. And Reckless Ben is like, he markets himself as something like a consumer advocate type. If you're from Colorado, you'd know Ron Zappolo. He worked for a local news station, and that's what he was. He was a consumer advocate. People would send him an email or call him up on the phone or something, and they'd say, "Hey, Ron, this corporation screwed me over. Can you help me out?" And he'd get out the microphones and the cameras and go confront them. And what did you do with these people's money? And so I think this Reckless Ben seems to market himself like this. And so he gets involved, and he has this, he just has a terrible time. This is one of the entire other aspects of it that I really won't even be getting into, which is odd for me because normally that would be the thing I would talk about. He's been arrested. His house has been swatted. It's all completely in violation of his civil rights. I have no doubt about it whatsoever within my mind. Even with the redacted videos that they put out, it's very clear that these cops are liars. They're ignorant, regardless of any duty to protect the community that they have. They're violating people's rights. And that's not to say that other people aren't in the wrong, but two wrongs don't make a right. I mean, if you really want to go there and talk about that. So I stopped watching that video because I didn't really, it just didn't really jive with what they were talking about. But these other guys do, including the civil rights attorney. And Reckless Ben, and this is when I find out really about the Reckless Ben stuff. I hadn't heard about this yet, but it pops up because I follow this civil rights attorney. And he basically just did an online deposition with Ben a couple of hours, I guess. I watched maybe the first 30 minutes of it or something like that, just enough that I knew what was going on from his part of it, because what he has to say about what everybody else has to say doesn't matter. And his part is getting arrested, basically, while trying to serve somebody. But he talks to this, the attorney gives this, basically, it's just a deposition. And unfortunately for Ben, it exposes his ignorance about all the related legalities, in particular the purpose of the police, which is not to serve and protect as so many of these people think. All these guys, they're all still statists. They still believe that the state works. They in some ways, and I think all of them, they're probably still idealists in that sense, that they want to believe that it works. And they're, I think most of them are right wing. I'm pretty sure that Asmongold is, and he gets retarded. There's no question about it. He gets to a point, I can't listen to the dude. Not that I really spend much time listening to these people anyway, but it does happen. If they're talking about something interesting, then I'm interested, and I'm going to check it out because they're there. They're plugged in. Why not? Let's hear what they have to say about it. There's nothing particularly wrong with that, even if you don't necessarily like the guy. I've told you about that, talked about that all the time. If I'm not getting the people, getting information from people that I don't particularly like, I may not be getting all the information. Just if I'm only going to the sources that I like, the people that I like to get information, there's a whole subset out there that I'm not going to get that information just because of that barrier that claim, you know, whatever it is, a left-right paradigm, something along those lines, or whether it's just a area of interest that generally I wouldn't find myself, but every once in a while crosses over. That certainly happens for everybody, I'm sure. So it's crazy the way it just sort of showed that these guys, none of them, I've known that about these guys before, but Ben in particular, because he's put himself in the middle of it. And he, in fact, he implicated himself in a plan to defraud Best and Johnson. And Best and Johnson are the next people to take over the store from the Gormans. When the Gormans leave, for whatever their reasons are, they leave, and Best and Johnson take over with their corporation, and they take over all the inventory, they take over the physical store, and they do so sort of rather rapidly, and basically the Gormans, you know, leave with their purse and some personal belongings, things like that. They leave the store with nothing and weren't necessarily expecting to have to leave the store at the time they did. That's part of their argument. Of course, they get this all on film, and they get these guys that have been given permission and have every right to do what they're doing in terms of taking over the store, and because they've been given that permission by the corporation. And by this time, everybody should know, because the Gormans have already been informed part of what has happened with Reckless Ben is he's gone into the store early enough on that the Gormans are still in the store, and he's asking them where's the rest of the collection, where's the money. So it all dates back. It stays back some a year ago, and more, because it's into late 2024 where all of this really starts, and it carries over for quite a while, and it's been some time since it was sort of stopped happening, and then a lot of these other things are coming up now because in particular of Reckless Ben and the fact that his house was swatted illegally, and that there's been claims by, it was either Best or Johnson, that claimed while Reckless Ben was trying to serve him, and we'll get into this, he was trying to serve him with papers, that they had heroin in the car and had cops, and it was 3 hours over on the side of the road, had him detained but didn't arrest him. It was crazy. See, the thing about the whole Reckless Ben thing is that he lacks a certain understanding of about the reality of the police, and that they're, you don't talk to the police. They're liars. They're there to uphold the law. They're not there to protect you or serve you. Their function is to uphold the law. He doesn't understand these things. I think I started to say there that he sort of implicated himself in this plan to defraud these guys. And we're talking about using the civil courts to do it, because they're saying, you know, there's about $100,000 or what in the estimated collection left to collect on. So he's talking about how, he was going to get nine of his buddies together to go ahead and file 10 individual lawsuits against these guys and try to collect $10,000 in each one, and as a civil case, you know, in just a small claims court, up to $10,000, and do that 10 times and recoup the $10,000, which is a stupid plan, and it's certainly stupid enough stupid to say it when you've been arrested and accused by the people in the jurisdiction where you were planning on potentially doing. Well, actually, maybe he was going to try to do that in his own jurisdiction, because he's from Ohio, I guess, and this is happening in Utah, where the shop is at, this franchise shop is at, for a brick and mortar that was owned by brick and mortar. I knew I was going to say that at some point. Bricks and Minifigures. It was owned by the Gormans. So he didn't. So this the Reckless Ben, he doesn't understand all of these things, including the importance of the separation between himself, the process server, and the respondent. He's the complainant, right? He's making a complaint, and the process server serves the complaint to the respondent, and then the respondent has to go and write a response. That's why he's called the respondent. And so he gets involved with, and he ultimately ends up getting himself swatted and getting himself arrested on various charges of stalking and violating the sort of community protest standards and various other things. Who knows? And while, yes, it's obvious that he was in the right in some ways, there's other things that he's done where it could be questionable. He's going to have some trouble. He's going to have to follow through on a lot of stuff and serve a lot of papers on a lot of people if he wants to sort of get back at the people who violated him, because there's nothing you can do about it once they've violated you like this. Yeah, he may win the case, but it's going to cost him all this money, all this time. Luckily, he can use it for publicity, but that's one of the crazy things that he's talked about, it how he went to court and they basically wouldn't say, the sort of DAs over there telling the judge, well, we can't tell him what we're charging him with or why he's being charged, because it's a danger to I think it's Johnson specifically, but they had approached both of the second owners after this. And so it's clear to me already that Reckless Ben doesn't understand simple contracts and simple understanding, that just because this store, whoever took over, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're responsible for the product, even if they have the product. Because the Gormans are responsible for the product. They're the ones that the contract is with. They're the ones that the agreement is with, the bailment, the consignment. They're the ones. And so this, and that's why I'm not going to talk really about the whole Reckless Ben thing and the rights violations and all that, because it's a whole separate thing, and a lot of it's something that he got himself into, so he's going to have to try to get himself out of. And he's, and again, he's already implicated himself in sort of attempts to defraud people and the wrong people when you talk about it, when you get down to it, and that's exactly what I'm doing here. So they're the new franchise owners that he's been messing around with, but they're not the ones that necessarily are responsible for it. It's certainly not by agreement. And so why are they sort of harassing those people? It's really kind of crazy that they would do that. So here, let's lay it all out. We have this corporation that these people have franchised from, and these people that franchised it took possession of property that they weren't supposed to, supposedly, but that's a moot point. But they did take possession of the property, and they signed an agreement, not as themselves. They did sign it as a corporation, but they're their own separate corporation from the corporation that is the Bricks and Minifigures. You know, that's what a franchise is. It's its own corporation. It's run and owned by those people under their own business name, but they have franchised. They don't own the business name. They probably don't own the property. Sometimes they do. There are all these different things, different ways that you can do these franchise agreements, but apparently Bricks and Minifigures owns this property and it's leased to them, and they pay a franchise fee, and they can then own their own store, and they own their own corporation. And so they are the ones that signed the agreement, and they're the ones that took the property. Now, if they lost the property, guess what? It doesn't really matter who they lost the property to, and they lost the property, right? So while it is a fact that just because the owner comes and takes a home, he doesn't necessarily own the stuff or business or whatever it is, his property back from a renter or whoever is inside of it that they've allowed to be inside there under contract, and that contract is now rescinded, that doesn't mean that when they throw them out that the owners of the property get to keep all of the stuff that was in the home. There's a process for that. They have to give that back. There has to be time allotted for the owners of it to come and take it back, unless a court determines that their property is forfeit for one reason or another, to cover some debt. And none of these things would happen before a judge. And so, and no, there's been very few judges so far in this thing, but the number of judges is going to increase real quick when it speeds up, if people don't just start agreeing to things and agreeing to settle things out of court. Which could happen, because that's what it comes down to. It's really a civil matter. The whole legal matters for Reckless Ben, that's a whole separate thing. So let me tell you about, I told you I'd talk about Uniform Commercial Code and where it comes into play here. It's a moot point in this case, but it's what Manziel should have done if he was going to, and it's what anybody should do. This is the real use of the UCC-1, in case anybody is interested. I've told you over the years that filing a UCC-1 doesn't magically make you owner of yourself and all these things, and you can start taking out debts and you can write off debts on yourself, all that stuff. Try it. Just go ahead and try it. Go ahead and do it in court. See how far you get. It's not the best path for trying to free yourself from the system, but it is a really good path to use to protect yourself if you were to go into a consignment agreement with somebody and you had more than $1,000 worth of product to give them. So in that case, you would go and file a UCC-1, because a UCC-1 creates a creditor-debtor situation between the people. It's an agreement. It covers things like consignment. That's what the real difference is between consignment and bailment, whereas bailment is much more of a common law a way to address having somebody else sell your stuff. The consignment is uniform. It's Uniform Commercial Code. It's part of the Uniform Commercial Code. It's in 9, somewhere in 9. I think I noted it somewhere around here, but I don't know if the note is even sitting here, because that's says something about drums. It doesn't have anything to do with what I'm doing. So, you know, whatever. But it's UCC 9102 something, something. It's in there. It wouldn't be that hard. UCC1's not really that complicated. It's just the rules for commercial code. It makes it so that it doesn't, commercial problems, questions of contracts don't take up any more of the court's time than they have to, because they're already guided by particular laws and they're spelled out. And if you don't follow them a certain way, then you don't have these protections. You don't have, you haven't done this. You've done something else. You didn't act commercially. You acted civilly. You acted whatever, some other way other than commercially. But so you file a UCC-1. Say you want to sell your comic book collection. It's a perfect example. And I should do a whole video on this. If you want to sell your comic book collection, you want to see it, and it's a big collection, it's worth more than $1,000, which really doesn't necessarily mean it's a very big collection at all. It could be very small to only be worth $1,000, but the $1,000 is that point in aggregate. So every if you delivered pieces of the collection over a period of time, it's the aggregate delivery, and anything over $1,000, it falls, it becomes this, you know, goods to be sold. It becomes consumer goods, and depending on what they are and what the terms are, but in general, that's the reason why it's under UCC-1 or UCC code, so that you're protected. You don't have to worry about the questions of those things. That's what it is. This is UCC-1. You are now a debtor of mine. I am a creditor of you. I am giving you something, and I'm crediting you with it. And not only that, if you fail to repay it, I'm at the top of the list. If I file my, if, because multiple creditors could file a UCC in response to somebody wanting to get some form of credit or property from them to be delivered, and so it's usually property. I'm not even sure, like zeros and on a computer or something, a loan like that. I would actually have to look into that. I'm pretty sure it's just related to property and physical goods in that sense. Because you want to give these physical goods over to somebody and have them sell them for you, and you still retain the rights to them. Well, in this case, you don't really retain the rights to them. They are free to dispose of them as they see fit, but they owe you. They owe you the debt for them, and you can collect. And if you're the first to file the UCC, then you are also the first in line to be credited. So you're the first creditor in line. If they fail to make their payments to everybody and you're one of their creditors, if you filed your UCC first for the property that they've taken of yours and that you can't get back because it's sold or it's burned or it's destroyed, it doesn't matter what happened to it. It doesn't matter that something happens to it. It's not entrusting them with the product and then good luck getting it back. It's here's the commercial law. You as a person are taking this at a debt. You are saying, I am acting as a business, that I intend to sell it or would dispose of it as how I see fit, but that I owe you for it, and that there's no question that I owe you for it, because it's not this contract that may or may not have been signed. Still, I personally didn't see the signed contract. It doesn't mean anything, obviously, because I'm not involved in the case. But it's problematic, right? Somebody, certainly for the corporation, if they're walking around and everybody's pointing at the corporation, and this is what's happened. This is part of the reason I wanted to talk about it, because everybody's hating on the corporation, and there's no reason for it. There's no particular reason for it. They're not at fault. They're not to blame. It isn't their problem. They didn't create this problem. They are as much a victim of the Gormans as everybody else is in this process. And that includes Ben, Reckless Ben. But Reckless Ben went off and did some stupid things on his own, and it's a whole other thing that he's going to have to deal with, that he's going to have to try to figure out how to resolve. And if he's lucky, they'll drop a lot of it because the cops had absolutely acted in violation of his rights. But even if they drop all that stuff, I wouldn't drop it in response to the suggestion that I don't pursue civil rights violations. violations if I were banned. I would absolutely sue every single person that was involved, every single one of the cops that was there on the street, anybody who signed a legal document, any DA, any judge that signed a legal document that allowed them to do that or didn't stop them from doing that or didn't keep it from being entered into evidence or used as evidence against him, or whatever it happens, everybody along the chain, absolutely anybody who puts their name to it that's illegal, sue every single one of them civilly for the maximum, and hell, if you can get it, try to get them for actual, you know, civil rights violations, as in, like, you know, keeping you captive for 3 hours. That is super against the law. It's just, you can't do that, and you can't make up reasons to arrest people. But the cops do it all the time, and that's part of what was fun and interesting about watching these guys, and including all of these the YouTube influencers and guys commenting on the Asmund Golds and Charlie Penguin Zero. I don't really know who these people are. Yes, I follow them, but I follow them as much as I follow anything out there. It's only if maybe possibly some piece of information, something cool, something interesting, something that I give a damn about. I'm not watching. I'm not consuming all the time. I really don't know that much about these people. I respect what it is that they do, because they're doing in basically the same thing I'm doing, but I do it in the long form. Asmund Gold, I guess, does it live, which I've done that before. And in case I haven't made it sort of perfectly clear yet, the Gormans are the ones that are at fault here. They're the ones that they created a contract with somebody, and they violated that contract, and they allowed, through their own negligence, to the property to be potentially disposed of, damaged by, just otherwise in other people's hands. It was taken out of their hands by their actions. It's their fault. They're the ones that everybody needs to sue if they want anything. And it's, wow, they probably wouldn't get anything. I can't imagine that they have anything to give, taking all of these things into consideration, right? What we're talking about here is that they weren't able to meet the obligations that they set for themselves, whether it was from their lack of business sense or ability to manage the money, or whether they, again, there's still potentially some point here that they could prove in front of the court that would make it so that Bricks and Minifigures was ultimately liable for their failure, but that doesn't remove their liability for the $200,000 Star Wars collection that belonged to Manziel. And while I'm calling it a $200,000 collection, again, understand that this is just the original appraised value. We just don't know. There's an accounting, and they're only just now, like I started to say at the beginning here, that they're only just now, within the last 36 hours or so, at least according to Bricks and Minifigures, acknowledging that they're officially acknowledging, they've unofficially acknowledged in other ways, but I think that's really more on the second store owners there. Those guys seem to be more responsible for that. Johnson and what was the other one? Why is it the name just sort of zipping right over my head at the moment? I hate it when things like that happen. I mean, you just sort of have to talk yourself through it. Best and Johnson, you do the best that you can to come right back around. They seem to have received the brunt of some claims and things that it's not, again, it's not their fault. Yes, they may have ended up with somebody else's property, but they didn't do so under nefarious means. It's not the same as sort of buying a stolen car stereo in a parking lot somewhere where you know that the car stereo is stolen, but everybody's pretending that, oh, it's just the good deal. And you buy the stereo, and then the cops come and get you. for receiving stolen goods. It's not really quite the same thing here, because there is obviously they legitimately have a right to the property. They legitimately, I'm talking about the physical part, the building and the fixtures and every single other thing. They have a legitimate right to that. And so the fact that there's things that don't belong to them or wouldn't belong to them and didn't belong to the Gormans that belong to the Menzel family is really a moot point. Again, the people responsible for it are the Gormans. They're the ones that should have never allowed it to get into the hands of somebody else. And if you remember, what I pointed it out earlier, it's known between all the parties that the Gormans had at least some of the collection, some of these high value sets in their home, that they had taken some number of them. I don't know that anybody knows that number. I do know that they believe that some, if not all of that number, were returned to the store, but we don't know that. And it's one of those parts, it's one of those points that's ultimately moot until the Gormans get sued by the Menzel family. And they want to prove that they've sold X amount and that there was only X amount left based on whatever documents and records and everything that would go along with it at their disposal. And presumably they will get those through the corporation. They'll get, because it seems, I started to say it a minute ago, that ultimately it seems that the corporation has figured out their end of it, that they've seen enough documentation. Maybe they finally saw a signed contract between the Gormans to know, or maybe they finally saw an inventory of the pieces and not just a sticker that was placed on some of these pieces of inventory so they'd know that the inventory belonged to somebody else, except that none of these other people that are supposed to know that were involved, and they shut out the guy that owned the stuff, of course, because as far as they know, they don't have any legitimate claim, and they are correct, and it doesn't matter. Look, I'm the first guy that, you know, the type of responses that the phone calls were eliciting from these guys without other information, I'm the first guy to go, you know, if that's the way you want to handle something, watch your back, because one day I'm going to appear there with a baseball bat, and we're going to settle up, and I will collect what you owe me out of your backside. I'm likely to think that in a situation where, because I hate bullies. That's why I don't like government. I hate liars. That's why I don't like cops. I don't like bullies and thieves and liars. So I don't like government, and I don't like cops. And I don't like it in corporations, and I don't like it in people who don't meet their agreements, their contractual agreements with people. I don't like it in myself. Why would I like it in somebody else? You agree to do something, you do it, and if you fail to do so, then you pay the price for it. That's what contracts are for. That's what agreements are for. That's what bailments are for. That's what consignment is for, regardless of uniform commercial code or any of this. This is where my life is. This is how I live my life. It's my word. I said I would do that. And if my not doing so when I promised to do so has cost you, then I may have to pay for what it is. I'm certainly willing to entertain that I have cost you something when I promised to do something for you and it didn't get done. If it didn't cost you anything, you know, then we may not have it. Just because I said I'd do something and I just decided I don't want to do it anymore, that's certainly perfectly fine too. But there is a line, and that line is when you're talking about exchanging property, you're talking about exchanging value, there is a line, and that's where I lose the value of my property because you said one thing and did another. And that's what this case is about. And it's ultimately what it will come down to, regardless of who sues who, where and when, and regardless of the whole Reckless Ben thing, because that's a whole, I may have to do a whole other separate analysis, anarchist audit of the actual arrest and everything. But you know where I stand on all that. It's the same place that I stand on all of those things. And I hope that he's able to prove at least enough of what the police and authorities were doing was illegal, that he can at least use that to defend himself from the other bogus charges. But he may not be able to defend himself from civil suits if he violated certain laws. It just depends. It depends on what is, you know, what laws are available in that jurisdiction. That has a lot to do with it, and what jurisdictions are filed under and what agreements people might come to after these sort of things, suits have been filed, because that's oftentimes what will happen. Nobody necessarily wants to go through these things, especially if they don't really stand to win anything. And that's sort of the position that Bricks and Minifigures is in now. They don't stand to lose anything, and they don't stand to win anything. So what they stand to lose is time and money wasted on dealing with this any more than they absolutely have to. And that includes going to court cases, even to get $100,000 from somebody. They will, you know, if the opportunity to not do that comes up and to settle, they will. That's what reasonable people do, and I believe that they have acted reasonably in this. I don't believe that that Bricks and Minifigures is at fault for what has gone. If I haven't been clear about it, I think I've been pretty clear about it, and I think it's consistent with the law. I think it's consistent with my understanding of the law. I think it's consistent with common law. I think it is a pretty open and shut matter in terms of, you know, there'll be some shifting things in the background. But in the end, the Gormans owe the Manziels, whatever the difference is, whatever the 100,000 that is left, or whatever is left of the 100,000. It was a $200,000 collection, and they apparently paid out $100,000 of it, or something to that effect, some half of the presumed valued value of the collection. And the valuation, unless I'm mistaken, was made by the Gormans, and it was promoted at that valuation. And the reality is in the time that this has gone on, the value didn't go down. There's no, that's not going to be considered. In fact, the consideration would be that it's gone up, and that the Manziels have been deprived of it for this amount of time, and it may be more money. So at this point, the Gormans owe other people and corporations about $200,000, if they're lucky. And if they have half a brain, they're going to try to figure out a way to settle it and get out of it as quickly and easily as they can, because they have done everything wrong up to this point. And Ben and Charlie and all these other guys holding up for them, I get it, I understand, but you lack information, and you just got the rest of that information right there. So there's no reason to be supporting these guys. I mean, you don't have to go out. You don't have to listen to the jargon of the lawyers. Oh, I tried to listen to a couple of guys talk about a few things, and I would get through a little bit of it, but then they're so over-speculating about the various causes and things that could happen, instead of just simply stating what is obvious. And I'm not afraid to go out on a limb and say it, because it's not a limb, it's obvious. Any person who has the information that I have on it, any person who's watched more than just Charlie's review of it, or even the Gormans, or even Reckless Ben, if you watched anything more than those, if you watched it, just those, you're not going to have the rest of the information that's out there. There is more to understand about it, but on the surface it should be, and it points back, that really points back to the fact that I stopped watching their video review. I mentioned that, and I could probably capture a screenshot of it. In fact, it would show the little red line showing playing through the video, and you'd go back to it, because I went back and checked it for myself so I could get the exact time to do it, because I remembered specifically, oh yeah, after all of this had happened and going through all this and this, you know what, I never even finished watching their video because something was wrong. And it's obvious what was wrong is that there were some irresponsible people took on some property that they lost, and now they owe somebody for that property, and they get a whole bunch of other problems on top of that. So we'll see how it all plays out in the end, but you know the guilty party is the Gormans, and that is it. That's the scandal. That is the Bricks and Minifigures scandal. Everybody stop picking on the corporation. It's really not their fault, no matter how dirty or the pool game has been. You know, they played some dirty pool, but they have every reason to. They have every right to, and I think they have every. I think it stands for itself. I think the information, once you get the full picture, stands for itself. So I got to go. That's it. That's the end of the show. We will. If you're on the network, stick around. There's a fantastic conversation coming up with Joseph Mba about movies and creativity. He's a producer, director. Stick around for that. Otherwise, look for it at towardanarchy.com. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy.